Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is the Adam Carriker Show on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Adam Carriker Show here on 93.7 The Ticket. All right, Joe or Jake, I don't want you to be scared. Halloween this year is on Friday the 13th. For the first time in 666 years. 66 years, my friend. Don't be scared of that. All right. The largest margin of victory, Nebraska versus Illinois, in the series history was in 1986. The margin of victory that day was 45 points. I was not even born just yet. All right. And if you're a Seminoles fan, I came across this stat before I bring on Jordan Congdon. Before you were snubbed out of the playoff because you would have gotten killed in the playoff, which you've proved since, you were 19-0, previous 19 games. Since then, 0-4. Points per game prior to getting snubbed, 39 points per game since, 12 per game. Opponents' points per game, 16. Since then, you're giving up an average of 34. The average margin of difference, average margin of victory or margin of loss in your 4 losses since Kirk Herbstreit and his favorite boys left you out. Sorry, Kirk. 22 points per game. Goodness gracious. All right, Nebraska's 3-0. Let's bring on Jordan Congdon, one of my former teammates, a former Husker, and a man doing some great work down in Mexico. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Adam. Thanks a lot for having me on, man.
Dude, I appreciate you joining me. And just a little refresher for the fine folks out there. Jordan was a first-team freshman All-American in 2005. First-team freshman All-Big 12. All right, he ranked first nationally among freshmen in field goal kicking accuracy at 826. All right, 2006 preseason All-Big 12 as well. And he tied for 16th nationally and also made the second most amount of field goals in the Big 12 on the season, averaging nearly 2 field goals a game. All right, Jordan, I'm going to hit you with it right out the gate. Are you ready?
All right.
Why'd you transfer to USC? What's the deal with that? You knew this wasn't going to be a fluff piece. Let's have some fun.
You know, you get lots of reasons, right? More than anything, when you get to where I'm at, I'm 38 now, you look back on decisions you make and things that happen. And more than anything, I would just honestly say, like, I was being woken up to a new way of being, of life, and looking at it from the perspective of faith. Like, God had a different path for me to take, you know, like, that's the honest truth. When I went to Nebraska, obviously I wanted to play football. My dream was to go to the NFL, but I was also kind of in that space of a young man that wanted to go to parties, have fun and live that way. And more than anything, I feel like looking back, it's like this line in the sand that God was saying, hey, I'd rather have you live a different way, a different life. And so sometimes you get into spaces where you are, and those types of massive life changes can't necessarily happen in that place. And so I needed a new scenery, a new change, a new life. And so I actually went home for 6 to 8 months, worked with the organization that I'm a part of now that my parents started, Amor Ministries. My wife and I are part of Amor Ministries, and we live down here in southern Mexico. And got to go home and then went to LA to go to SC because God had me on a different path. He was leading me into new ways of being. And more than anything, I believe firmly leading us to where we are here. And, you know, you can think about life and ask yourself questions like, if I would have stayed in Nebraska, would I be where I am today? You know, you don't get answers to that questions. But I do know that making that change at that time, being in LA for the years I was there, the 3 years that I was there, and working with homeless children on Skid Row in an after school program, took me on a path and a journey that got us to exactly where we are here. That's the faith answer on the side of that type of thing. I'm not going to, I don't think, get into all the football stuff. Yeah, there's lots of things that happen. Honestly, I think more than anything in football, my dream was to go to the NFL. I thought working hard and training would make my legs stronger, and it just didn't. That's the reality. Like I was limited on kicking the long field goals, which impacted the future of my life and trying to go to the NFL and all that. And yeah, just the prospects of being in college too. So yeah, I don't think that gives you maybe the answers that you might be looking for, but that's what I got.
No, it's all good. I do want to get into what you're doing down in Mexico here in just a minute, but like you had a great freshman season. Okay. You quickly established yourself as one of the top kickers in the nation during that 2005 season. You enjoyed arguably the finest debut season of any kicker in Nebraska football history. Like I mentioned, en route to freshman All-American honors. Okay. All Big 12 type honors as well. So obviously some things did go well during your time here at Nebraska. So during your time here, what are some of the fondest memories that you do have while you were here? Do any of those memories include anything ridiculous of me? You can always embarrass me. I always give people a free platform. If that's one of those memories, if it's something else, feel free to share those with the fine folks at home now.
Yeah, more than anything, just the fans, man. We always say being a Husker is there's literally no fans like there are in Nebraska, and obviously every fan base is going to have their discussions. But I remember one time something that amazingly stood out to me was when we played Texas Tech. They ended up beating us. I can't remember if it was in my first year or second year, but they ended up beating us at Nebraska. And from what I remember, right or wrong, the fans, our fans, stood up and applauded Texas Tech as they left the field. And that is something unbelievably rare. Like, you don't do that. When the rivals come in, they're your rivals. You hate on them. If they beat you, we've been in stadiums in different places, they spit on you, all that type of stuff. But the class of the Nebraska fans is absolutely fantastic. And I remember going back to when I visited my senior in high school. It was an October or November game. And being a kid in San Diego, the largest football program in San Diego is San Diego State. Great environment, great stadium, but it's not Nebraska. And I went on that visit, and just the engagement with the fans and seeing the environment of the stadium, usually packed out while we're warming up, absolutely crazy. And I was like, yeah, I could do this. And I can say in the time being at Nebraska, that never changed. The fan base of the Huskers is absolutely the best. And those people love their football. I remember when I got in the dorms, some kids that grew up in Nebraska were on my floor, and we were talking about growing up in Nebraska and what it's like in the state. And they told me, you can look at the economy of Nebraska up or down. And obviously, I don't know what the differences are, but you can have a relatively good idea of how the Huskers played football that season. And so yep. It was amazing, man. Like looking back on the time in Nebraska, we got to go to the Alum Bowl, absolutely unbelievable experience. Obviously, the one kick I really got to do that really made a difference was against K-State my first year there in 2005. We beat K-State by 2 points. We went on to play Colorado the next week. beat them in that Thanksgiving tight game, went to Alamo Bowl and beat Michigan. And had an absolutely unbelievable experience there as a player. And yeah, just really thankful for being welcomed there by the coaching staff, by all the players. Think about you, man. Just that you were a beast. Like, you set the example for our entire team of what it was like to be a player at a star level and the type of work you did. You don't find that in every star player. And you set the example, you set the bar high, took care of your body, you did everything the right way. And so I don't have anything funny to say. I just have to say, like, I respected you and you set the example for the rest of us, man. It was absolutely fantastic.
I appreciate that. And I will be sending that check in the mail that I guaranteed you if you'd say something nice about me on air. So that check's on the way. I appreciate it. All right. But let's talk about how you arrived at what you're doing now and some of the work you're doing down in Mexico. And I hope I pronounce this right. You are in Puerto Morelos, Mexico. What took you down there and what brought you to the path to what you're doing down there now, trying to make an impact in people's lives in that community? And how can people help contribute if they're so inclined?
Yeah, so my parents started an organization called Amor Ministries in the late 70s, became kind of official in 1980, and focused on working in the north of Mexico and kind of the Baja California region. And through them initiating at the start, they moved towards building houses for families because of working with local leaders in every location where Amor works. We have a ministry planning board of local leaders that help make the decisions on the ways we should function and operate. And it's just a really good model, you know? And so I grew up.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on pristine exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
in that, like, that was my whole life. We lived in San Diego. We moved there when I was 2 years old. Part of what Amor started with was doing an inner city urban church in a community called City Heights, the most racially diverse community in San Diego at that time, socioeconomic, very low, lots of gang issues and drugs and alcoholism and all that. And so I got this taste as a young kid of what it meant to follow Jesus, like a very practical sense of loving God and loving your neighbor as you love yourself. And that's what my family did. And that's what the staff on Amor did. That's the example that they showed to me. And so even as I got into high school and having this dream to go to the NFL, I knew practically what it meant to be a Christian, to live out my faith in the world and to use my gifts and talents to serve other people. And so that was kind of, it was always there in the background. You know, when I was focused on going to the NFL, it takes everything you got to get there. Like, you don't get there doing it halfway. You got to go 100% in. And so that's what I did. And my parents gave me the freedom to do that and supported me completely in that. I had great coaches along the way in high school, great trainers and all that. And so got to Nebraska, like I was saying, and you kind of start to, if that's your dream, you can start to connect with, okay, do I have the ability to continue this path? And that was still my dream. Even when I transferred to SC, like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go to the NFL, but you start to accept some realities on, for me in particular, like, well, my physical abilities probably aren't going to get there. So it had something to deal with, like, a dream that I had not becoming a reality, right? But when I moved to SC, actually, it goes back to when I was at Nebraska, I got into high school education and being a Spanish teacher. So that's where the path started of, like, okay, I'm going to be a teacher and I'm going to be a coach. Transferred to SC. And exactly the type of community I would do that in became more of a reality. Being in South Central Los Angeles, and really the biggest reason I chose to go to SC was to be right there in that community, to be there in Watts, in Compton, to be able to do work and service work in the housing projects that are there. And that reality of becoming a teacher and coach became a reality of, okay, this is the type of community I'm going to do it in. While I was at SC, went through, I don't know what you call it, but let's say arguably like a faith crisis, right? And the experiences I was having as being a Christian, I was kind of getting to a point of like, God, if this is what it means to be a Christian, kind of this up and down feeling really proud and feeling really guilty based on what I'm doing. If that's what this is all about, like, I'm not sure I'm really up for that. And so I asked God there. I was like, well, God, if that's not it, I need you to show me. And so getting into my last year at SC, I was applying for Teach for America, which was directly on the path of what I thought I was going to do. Work in a community like Harlem, Watts, you get to pick your choices of where you'd ideally go, and then they place you. And at that same time was dealing with this crisis of faith and believed it would be a good idea to look at possibly going to seminary and taking some time to just sort out with God, okay, what does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean to engage with the Heavenly Father, right? And so at the time I was at a Presbyterian church, found out from some really good friends and my parents, who were actually board of directors at a time for a more, that being part of a Presbyterian church, the Princeton Theological Seminary out in New Jersey, if you are a member of a Presbyterian church, you can go at a very low cost. Like, they cover room and board and books and all that, and they make it very feasible financially for people that are part of Presbyterian churches. And so I was like, yeah, let's look at that. So I applied for seminary and just landed on, well, if I get into seminary, that's what I'm supposed to do. So I got to go out to New Jersey to Princeton Theological Seminary for 3 years. And was on that journey. Okay, one, sorting out, like, who am I, God? Like, what does it mean to be created in the image of God? What does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean to disciple others to do the same? And got some answers, but also walked away after 3 years with lots of questions, which I think is part of the faith journey and what it should be. But in that time, my dad brought me down to Cancun to share the project here that was going to happen. And initially, we were going to build, the vision was to build a pastor training campus and do kind of what Amor's known for doing, which is with house building. And when I came down here, arguably the biggest thing I was wrestling with was the sports side of my life. Like, from, let's say, at least from 8 to 18, got to, or 22, 23 when I finished SC, got to play sports at a very high level. And so I was like, God, it doesn't make sense to get to this place in sports and not use that in some way in my life. And so when we were coming down here and my dad was going to plant the project, and me and my mom had some ideas, like, this would be cool if Jordan got involved. Like, obviously, parents that do what my parents do, they want their children to be involved. Came down, he was talking to me about American football down here in the southeast region of Mexico. He was telling me it's the fastest growing sport in the region. And I was like, Dad, you're crazy, man. It's Mexico. Mexico plays soccer, and I know about some baseball, right? And so I was like, there's no way they do football. He's like, all right, you're going to see. Just believe me. And so we come down. Cancun is the very northeast tip of the peninsula. Puerto Morales is a 30-minute drive down here. And so with the friend that invited us to do this project here in Puerto Morales, we would drive every single day of that week. We'd come to Puerto Morales. And so it's like this main highway. You can kind of envision it. It has these universities along it. And they had football fields. And they had football fields with field goal posts and everything. And I was like, well, okay, maybe they do play football. But every time we passed, nobody was ever using it. So I was like, well, it's probably not the fastest growing sport in the region, right? But the last day we were here before we went back and flew back to San Diego, there was a football game going on. And we pulled in, and our dear friend, his name is Alberto Figueroa, he had some friends in the stands. And so we sat there and talked with them a while while watching the game. And it turned out, it was the fastest growing sport at the time in the region down here. And the league that runs down here is called the Organization of American Football in the Southeast. Was the fastest growing organization in the area. And it was in that spot that I felt this implantation that everything in my life leading up to this point could be used and utilized in one place. And that goes into high level education, that goes into working in communities of poverty, that goes into directly related to sports. And so came down here and walked away from here like, unless God tells me, like, that's not what I'm supposed to do and there's something else, that's probably where I'm going to end up. And I think I still had a year and a half to two years left at seminary. So I went back, went through those 2 years, and in those 2 years, met my wife, April, on a crazy, just God coincidence trip we took to Indiana. But we literally, when we met, we talked about Mexico, we talked about missions, and we talked about soccer. And our love story started. We did long distance relationship, old school type, with writing letters, obviously not super old school because we could still use phones and video and all that type of stuff. But we were on this journey of, okay, if we're going to get married, like, this is what we're going to do. And so we got married, and we went to San Diego to get prepared. We worked in Baja California, did lots of preparations, and then moved down full time to Puerto Morelos, Mexico in 2016, which is 8 years ago now. And we came with the vision, like I mentioned, about doing the campus and house building. And the way we've landed on what we're doing, which is education and sports with kids and working with families in that way, serving families that way, was there were some complicated land issues with the property that we're going to use to build the campus.
Hey, Jordan.
And we were building how?
Jordan.
Yeah.
Real quick. We got about 1 minute left. I don't mean to cut you off. Just let people know exactly what it is you're doing and how exactly they can help contribute. Again, I don't want to cut you off. We just got a break coming up. Sorry.
It's all good. No worries. So we came down with a vision and felt God was leading us to do education and sports with kids. So we started a sports program called the Puerto Morelos Tortugas, working with kids from 3 to 18 years old. Our goal is to develop them at the highest level possible so that they earn scholarships. And in the last 2 to 3 years, we've had 5 kids earn scholarships to go to university and play football and study and pursue their career path. And then in education, we started childcare 3 years ago. And then this August, we just started kindergarten and first grade. And we're looking at developing that. So you asked, how can people get involved?
Yeah.
We have a sponsorship program for the kids that we work with, $50 and $100. You can look at that on our website at www.amor.org/YP. And then we're also looking for big-time donors that want to get involved in what we do. We're looking at buying a piece of land, building a proper school education campus, and offer the kids of Puerto Morelos the absolute best, which is exactly what they deserve.
Dude, I appreciate you taking the time. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to help contribute, I hope Jordan was able to provide you some information. They're doing some great work down there in Mexico. All right, trying to help people and kids in that community using sports to do so. And again, thank you for taking the time to do the interview with me, Jordan, and it's good to chat with you again.
Yeah, you too, Adam. Thanks a lot for having me on, and best of luck with everything that you're pursuing, man.
All right, don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.